Welcome to episode 4 of the Furlough Bros podcast. Today is August 23rd, 2011.
October 23rd, I'm Matthew. Just so you know.
Yeah, October 23rd, 2011. My name is Matthew Furlough, and this is my co-host, James Furlough.
Hi there.
So, thanks for jumping in on that one. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations, their dealings back and forth, the people working for the companies, their marketing campaigns, the technology they're developing, and so much more. So before we get into the show, James has got a short disclosure for us that we got to go through.
Yes. Both Matthew and I work for large tech companies. I work for a one called Hewlett Packard. Matthew works for one called Genentech, and which stands for Genetic Engineering Technology. I just recently learned, which is very cool. And basically, what we want to let you know is when we are talking about something, it is our own opinions. We do not represent them in any way, form. They just pay for our livelihoods. And so it's very important that anytime we're giving an opinion, it is us giving it to us, and we should make it a point to say, I think. If we ever say we actually meant to say I. So just keep that in mind. This is us talking, not official HP or Genentech, opinions. There you go.
Perfect. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, my Twitter handle is at Matthew Dean Furlough. And James?
Is at James Furlough. And so there it is. Follow us.
All right.
Please, yeah, please, actually, please do. I need followers.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I've only got like 200 or something.
I'm kind of. I only have like 8.
8?
8.
Wow, you're not trying very hard.
I say interesting things, though, and that's the disappointing part.
Well, that's.
I gotta work harder. That's all there is to it.
You should probably hire a social media expert guru to to help you out with that. There's a lot of them around. They're on Twitter all over the place.
I don't believe it. Most revered position in technology. Yes. That's a joke. Nobody reveres them.
Good clarification. Way to clarify.
So, yeah, today it's been a good week in technology, I thought. Nothing too huge, but some interesting stuff coming up, so we're going to jump right into it. I read an interesting article earlier this week about Kodak and what their deal is. I don't know.
So I haven't read this. I don't know about it, so give me the real quick... what about them?
So basically what's going on is that Kodak is in the middle of this kind of terrible thing that's happening that all of the products that they make are slowly or very quickly dying. So with the advent of the iPhone 4S, basically point-and-shoot cameras are about a year or two away from just being totally pointless. Everybody who wants a... Yeah. I think we just got the title. That's one big area that Kodak is working on is camera technology, and their standalone cameras don't necessarily have much of a market anymore. And it's, since they're not Canon or Nikon, they don't make your really, really high-end professional cameras. They don't have much of a market there. And the other big thing that they do is print, and obviously printing is a slowly dying field.
There's still, you're wrong.
Nope, it's not. Okay. Nope.
Printing's here to stay forever. It's going to be great.
Forever.
Life is good. Life is good. No problems.
No problems.
Friendly disclosure reminder, I work for a printing company.
So, anyways, one of the things that this is pointing out is that there's going to be a rough ride for Kodak unless they change their company's position. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that Kodak's got a tremendous number of patents, and they've got some great fundings for their labs. And so I was thinking, and I predict that you'll start to see this if Kodak's smart over time. You're going to start to see Kodak move away from hardware, and you're going to start to see them move into the realm of the internal provider. For example, as a parallel, you've got Intel. Intel makes the CPU for basically every Windows machine out there.
Correct.
With very few exceptions, and they've got a really branded. You know, you pop up in your new HP EliteBook 8440P, and right next to Windows 7 sticker, you got an Intel Core i5. I don't know what else is in here. I do. But, I mean, from the stickers, I don't know what else is going on in this computer. I don't know who makes the RAM. I don't know who makes the hard drive or whatever. But I know who makes the processor. And I think that Kodak, with this push to get really high-quality video editing software, camera picture editing software on a touch screen computer with internet connectivity and a really high-quality lens and chip that's actually taking your picture, I think Kodak's really got to get in the game of getting themselves mutually branded with something like the iPhone or the majority of Android phones. Android phone powered by a Kodak camera. I think that that's something they really need to do to survive. And I really think that as we see time go on, you're going to see Kodak become, quote-unquote, an invisible
interesting
component.
Yeah, that actually would be pretty cool. Where they're not making the cases, but they still got good lens technology and photo processing technology.
Yeah, some of the best in the world, but they can't sell their devices to save their lives.
Well, I mean, why would you when I can buy a camera and a phone and an internet device and an iPod and a portable gaming system all in one? You know,
right.
There's no reason to do that.
Exactly. And so I think Kodak's going to have to change at the times, or we're going to see a legend collapse.
So do you think they actually will, or do you think they're, you know, are they digging their heels in and be like, no, we're going to make this work, or are they actually starting to make that transition?
I think that you're I haven't seen a lot of the evidence for them making that transition hardcore yet, but I think you're going to start to see it really soon.
Okay.
Over the next year or two, where you're going to really start to see the Kodak camera start to, you know, they'll keep it around as long as they make a little bit of profit on it, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them really push to get a Kodak photovoltaic cell on. I don't actually know if that's what it's called. That's a solar cell.
Sounds believable to me.
sounds smart. But an actual camera chip into a smartphone. That's my prediction.
Yeah, Android would be the one to do it with too. Well, yeah. I mean, clearly Apple is not going to. But yeah, huh? Yeah. Poor Kodak. I wonder if they'd ever sell them their naming rights to me. It's just such a good name. You'd hate to just see it disappear.
Yeah, they got a bear named after them, or something. One way or another.
That's cool, I guess. Yeah. Or something.
So that was, or something. So, kind of an interesting,
Yeah, it's always amazing watching these technologies sunset, you know, and just kind of, I don't know, it's tough transitions sometimes, but...
Especially when you have to change the entire mentality of your company or get rid of entire departments because, sorry, we don't make hardware anymore, you know.
Yeah.
That's tough to watch, and that can be really hard for a company to survive through.
But, hey, you know, if they can make that transition and, you know, like AMD is being the processor inside a smartphone since they didn't exactly kill it in the computer industry.
right.
I mean, don't get me wrong, they did well, but, you know, clearly Intel was number one, and they're number one for smartphones. And if Kodak can figure out a way to get in and give, you know, lenses or, you know, photo processing, whatever, to smartphones and power the innards, you know, become invisible like you're talking about, that'd be pretty cool. And they'll be around for a very long time if they can figure that out.
Yeah, because cameras aren't going away. They're
no,
just
not at
point and shoot cameras are fading.
Right. Yeah. the standalone device, I think, is the best
right.
way to put it. Because, you know, I mean, my iPhone's a point and shoot, honestly. I mean.
Right, yeah.
So,
Especially the iPhone 4S with its 8 megapixels.
Yeah.
8 million pixels.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so that kind of brings us to another interesting point, talking about the company that's helping destroy Kodak, Apple's earning reports.
Yeah, that's right.
So so Apple had their earnings reports this week. Some would argue inconveniently the same week that, or the week after, the 4S was launched, so no 4S devices were counted in their sales report for this last quarter.
That's normal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's happened in the past, but since it's predicted that they sold 4 million devices in 1 week, it might have helped their numbers a little bit. But so did you catch what the big news was for that?
So what I know is that Apple beat their revenue estimates but fell a little short of investor revenue estimates, which, you know, quite honestly were pretty high. You know, and it was Apple's second highest quarter, their first highest being the previous one. And the reason why they fell behind was they think, because I guess the iPhone is like their number one revenue making device, because they sold like 3 million less iPhones than they anticipated, which serves them right for not bringing out the iPhone 4S sooner. So, you know.
You know, I was going to say, I can't tell you how many people asked, you know, talked about buying the iPhone 4, and I said, no, don't do it. And they'd be like, oh, why not? And I was like, they're going to announce the 4S in a month and a half. You're going to be so upset with yourself.
Yeah.
And if I was saying that to people, I'm sure that there were millions of people saying that to their friends across the, you know, Americas and Europe and everything. And I'm sure that there was just a real, you know, there was a slow reaction.
This pent-up demand.
Pent-up
or
demand.
Or unrealized demand, perhaps. Yeah, last quarter.
Yeah. So, but I do have to say, if you were an investor in Apple, man, this was a bad week to not be buying like crazy, because I don't think that you're going to see that stock stay down after those. Because I mean, they're going to sell so many phones this next quarter. It's going to be unbelievable. It's literally going to be shocking, I think.
Oh yeah, it's the holiday quarter. We already know that they sold 4 million in 1 week or 1 day or whatever
right.
it was. You know, so that's gonna. Well, obviously, that's the big bump. Yeah, I think they will have a ridiculous banner quarter, and, you know, good for them. It's a good phone.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the iPad responds over the next fiscal quarter, I think. You know, it's Christmas, so I think you'll sell a lot, but I also think that you're going to start to see the expectation for the iPad 3 start to build.
Well, I would specifically not ask for an iPad for Christmas. If it was me, I would say, give me the $400 towards the next gen. You know, that's...
Hey, yeah, that's a good point.
That'd be my advice.
I think I just figured out what I'm asking for Christmas. No, I actually... I've got other Apple products in mind. But, yeah, I think you're going to see more of that. I do think that the iPad is a little bit different in that I actually think it's a more mature device. You know, what are they going to bring to the next generation of the iPad 3? And I think at this point you're going to see better battery life. You're going to see Siri, obviously. Maybe a better camera, I think.
Do you think you'll see Siri in the iPad? I mean,
does it make
sense? Okay. I'm trying to... you know, and I can share a little bit about my experience so far this last week, but I'm trying to figure out if it makes sense for it to be on the iPad or not.
What do you now? So this is a great segue. What makes you think? Why do you not think it's a great thing for the iPad?
Well, I mean, part of it, and maybe this is just me not being used to it yet, but it's like I put it up near my face when I talk to it. You know, I'm at least, let me think here. I'm less than 12 inches away. I can tell you that. But I can have it now, having said that, I can have it sitting on a table and I can just press the button and talk to it. Now, granted, I talk a little bit like this, like it's a child or a hard of hearing person. It's the kind of thing where, yeah, they probably will add it, but I don't know if it makes sense to have it, especially since, you know, my findings have been that, Siri is awesome for a hands-free environment, AKA driving. And I'm never going to be using an iPad while driving. Well, okay, I shouldn't say never, but I will probably not on a regular basis be using an iPad while driving. So I won't have that need for the hands-free experience, in which case all that's really fun for it is the sassy, you know, Siri responses. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense for me for it to be there other than the novelty of it being there. And I don't know, maybe you get different types of queries, and maybe it'll be different once they open up an API for it and let other apps connect to it. Maybe that's when it would make sense for it to connect to the iPad, but at least right now I don't think that it needs to or it should.
Okay, so I am inclined to agree with you to a degree.
Yes, I'll take it.
For the idea that Siri in its current beta, as Apple describes it, is not necessarily going to be a huge advantage on the iPad for the list of reasons you've stated. It's not necessarily designed for hands-free use. It's actually, I think, one of the few Apple devices that's designed specifically for hands-on use, you know, 10-finger usage.
I'll buy that.
But I do think that there's some things that Siri will be able to do that it's going to be able to do simply faster than what your fingers can handle. And it's like one of the things that Siri does that I don't think would have even made sense without Siri is the location-based reminders. When they first announced location-based reminders, I remember thinking, "You mean I'm going to have to set up my own geo fence and then have it remind me?" It just seems so time-consuming, just trying to be like, "Okay, around this building, remind me if I get this far to go and buy flowers for my wife." It just seemed it seemed really overly complicated, and then they showed it on Siri, and I went, that was the missing ingredient. Something where you could just tell it, do this building or do this area, and then send me a reminder, and where it automatically sets up your geofence. That, to me, was like a key factor, and I think that that's definitely something that, especially with cellular-enabled iPad, that's something that you can really take advantage of, and it doesn't make sense to have that feature really without Siri.
Right. Hey, which, by the way, a little side note on the reminders, if you do set up those geofences, it will be tracking your location in the background.
Yeah, it does. It asks you to agree to that.
Well, it's not the agreeing part. It's the... It will be using your battery to figure out where you are at all times, just in case you step into the geofence. Now, I don't know if it does it every 2 seconds or every 30 seconds. I don't really know. But
that's hilarious, because I set it up on like 8 people's phones already. Well, I set up geofences and then accepted. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. So, well, you'll know when you go back to the home screen, if the little arrow in the upper corner is still on, you're like, oh, okay, it's still running. Which, you know, hey, maybe it's not that big of a deal. Maybe it's not that big of a battery drain, but that's how it works.
You know, knowing Apple, there's a cost, but they wouldn't have made it so that it was a dramatic, you know, there'll be a shock to the system. And really and truly, how fast do you have to be going to really get far out of the the geofence. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure it's I'm confident it's well engineered. So, but there was a couple of things that somebody went through a list of potential uses for Siri, and the thing that that they went through with Siri is they basically asked it a bunch of questions, and usually if you ask it a question that it doesn't know, obviously Siri just brings you to like, can I want me to search the web for that? But there are some questions that you can ask it that it gives you a pre-designed response outside of want me to search the web for that. And a couple of these examples are make a new contact, read my last email, when is the next flight, update my Facebook status, send a tweet, download an app, play video, open iTunes, read me a story, take a photo, make a voice memo. All of these things are things that you can ask it to do that would make sense that it would be able to do.
So you can't have – and it, Siri doesn't tweet for you right now?
It does not yet, which is interesting.
Send a tweet. I'm curious.
I can't send tweets for you. Sorry about that.
Oh, well, there you go.
Now, what's really fascinating about that is that if they weren't working on that functionality, it would just bump you to go for a web search. What that probably is that's the canned response for non-developers. If your phone is flagged as a developer, it probably does send. It can send a tweet, but it's designed as pre-beta, so it's you know not quite ready to push out to the main people. And it probably has to do with third-party APIs and connecting to Twitter and that sort of thing. But I'm sure that that's the same situation you get with Facebook. Downloading an app is an interesting issue that should be able to do.
Wow, that'd be interesting.
Search for an app, download it.
Other than you're required to put in your password each time. I don't know, that may be kind of weird, but maybe you have like your special phrase.
Yeah. Well, and maybe you just have to type in your password. You know, maybe that's a requirement, and but you can search and download it up until that point.
Right.
Another thing that you can do is visually impaired people.
Just wanna.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what? I'm willing to put money on that one's coming.
How much? Same with, let's bet right here.
Okay.
We got a record.
Okay. I will bet $20 by the end of 2012.
Oh, jeez. Okay. How about this? How about not the end of 2012? You think end of 2012? You think so?
You know, I actually am willing to bet that Siri, they won't have a major update on Siri until probably the middle of until iOS 6.
So WWDC.
To be total.
Right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll go until then. Do you think they'll have all these by then? Pressure's on.
Yeah.
Okay. You think yes. Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you what. We don't necessarily have to do cash. So if they have, you know, these updates announced, they would announce them at the WDC because it would be an API of sorts for them to plug into.
Right.
When's the next time I will see you? Because I don't necessarily want to do $20, but I like maybe buy you a beer or something.
That's fine.
All right. Yep. I'll get you a drink.
Boom. All right.
Vice versa.
It's on like Donkey Kong. All right.
You heard it here first.
But so to kind of get into this, you know, different things you can ask it to do that it has a response for, just it doesn't do anything. Read me a story. And that's an interesting one because Siri is a voice to text, and it's a non what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
It can read words without having to, you know, it's not pre-assigned speech. So you can give it any sentence and it'll read it. So why can't Siri read a book for you? Outside of the legal issues that are
Yeah, really.
In that.
You know what would be cool is when Siri can translate for you. Siri, say blah, blah, blah in Spanish, or say in Spanish, blah, blah, this is it.
Yeah, I think that's another thing that's coming. And I definitely think that third-party APIs for Siri are coming.
I hope so.
They're going to come with a vengeance. And I think when you get all those sorts of things together, I think you start to see a more coherent package for Siri on the iPad. You know, I think you suddenly will start to see stuff that you'll start to see apps and you'll start to see features that don't even make sense without Siri.
Right. Ooh, interesting.
And that, to me, is when it'll just become obvious.
Actually, so, you know, so here's a cool thing. One of the awesome things about, like, Walt Disney was when he made Steamboat Willie, which was, like, the first the first talking cartoon that they did. There had been other sound cartoon, or I think like talking slash sound, like with music, whatever. You know what I mean? Was the first one, because other companies had done that before, like they had background music, that kind of stuff, where Steamboat Willie was the very first movie or short where it had to have the music. If you took it away, you'd be like, what the heck are they doing? This is crazy. But the music brought it alive, and it was an integral part of the movie, of the cartoon, and that was what was so transformative and amazing about that movie. And I think you're going to start to see things like that. I mean, you already start to see, you know, you got check-in games that you can't do that on a computer. You've got games, you know, I got those flying games where you're literally taking the phone and you're whooshing it around in all different directions because, you know, it's all about the, you know, where the phone is and location and accelerometer and that other one that knows your axis. The gyroscope. And I think you're 100% right, and where when you're going to be able to, like, touch the screen, heck, that's even just a different type of gameplay that's never been before.
Right.
You know, and then it'll involve your voice, and I think, yeah, and I totally think you'll be like, yeah, it's going to be, if you've had an XY axis of games, it will be the equivalent of adding a Z axis where, you know, it's just like you start to multiply all these things out, and it starts to get crazy, pretty awesome. Yeah, sure, it'll be a slow trickle. But I do think eventually you're going to get to the point where it's you do it. You know, it's weird if you don't.
Yeah.
It's like it's kind of weird on a phone if you don't have some component of touch. You're like, what? I don't understand.
Yeah, how do I use this? Yeah. You know, and that's and I completely agree. I think that, and that's why I think that they'll introduce it to the iPad, not because they need to or because it makes a lot of sense, but because they're going to be introducing. It's just an entire group of people that are going to start to learn how to interact with Siri before they
meet. And I could definitely see it for accessibility reasons. That totally makes sense to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Read me my tweets. Yeah. That's accessible.
Yeah, man. You know, it'll be pretty exciting to see it. See how it evolves.
I think it's got a good future. I think it'll be. Yeah. I mean, just from my experience of using it the last week, it is super. Super useful in the car. I use it, you know, I've used it regularly while driving. And I think that it's just plain fun to use it with other people. I mean, just today for lunch, we were looking for a Chinese restaurant. And I was like, hey, Siri, I'm looking for a good Chinese restaurant. What do you got for me? And, you know, and Siri was like, here they are, you know. Here's some, I think it was like, here's 11 of them sorted by, you know, how delicious they are. And we're like, cool, perfect.
Siri reminds me so much of the experience of watching people use Siri over the last few weeks. Reminds me so much of the original iPhone, where, you know, the original iPhone, it wasn't the first time. It wasn't the first smartphone. It wasn't the first touchscreen device. It wasn't the first in any particularly fantastic way. It was just Apple's take on it, and somehow it was better. You know, Siri's not the first AI. Siri's not the first voice-to-text translator. Siri isn't the first voice recognition on the iPhone. But somehow, Apple just throws in their little twist. They go, this is our take on it. And everybody's like, this is awesome. This is so cool. You know, and I think that you're going to really see other companies need to catch up because people, unlike FaceTime, I think people understood the gimmick of FaceTime and weren't as impressed with it as Apple wanted them to be. Whereas Siri, I have a feeling that people are totally astounded and surprised by Siri and very excited by Siri. And I think it's just going to get better.
I totally agree. I mean, it was like today we were with friends, and that was when I just did it with them, you know. And the wife was like, "Oh my word, did you just do that? No, you did not just do that." And I was like, "Yeah, take a look." And I tapped on the one that we wanted, and it brought up the map, and I went, "Here's where it's located." And then she went, "What? No, no way." And I laughed, and I went, "Yeah." The funny part though is Siri doesn't know how to spell Halloween. And I went like this. I went, "Here, watch this. I'll send your husband a message." I went, "Hey, tell her husband." I was like, "Tell him or send him a message saying Happy Halloween." And she was like, "What? You did not just." And I went, "Send it." And I was like, and I said, "See, it spells it with an O instead of an A at the beginning." She was like, "Oh, that's kind of goofy." I went, "Yeah, I don't know what's," but Siri capitalizes it, so.
It knows, but it spells it wrong. Yeah. That's just hilarious.
Like, that's funny, but she was just like, it was utter shock, and she was like, "That is the coolest thing ever." I was like, "Well, yes, it is."
I have one of my really good friends is taking the fundamentals of engineering test with me next week, mm-hmm. and we were supposed to be studying, but we decided we didn't want to Friday night, and so we went to the Apple store, and I was showing him Siri because he understands technology. He's just not very impressed by technology. Like it doesn't get him going, and so I was trying to get him all excited about Apple and stuff, and so we started with Siri, and I was like, "Oh man, all right, let's." I thought I got one that was just going to blow his socks off right away.
Yeah.
I was like, "Siri, what's the integral of x squared between 4 and 100? And it just, boom, gives you the answer
right.
in like 10 seconds. And you're like, "See, isn't that awesome?" And he was like, not impressed at all. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And so I did the text. Okay, I texted myself, and he was kind of a little bit more impressed by that one. But
ironically,
but not really.
I think, like the integral one's the cool one. But anyway,
right. That's what I was thinking. So we went through it all, had it play music, had it skip songs, all sorts of just kind of going through it, and slowly he was getting a little more impressed, and finally he goes, "Hey, tell it to get us a beer," and I went, "Siri, remind me to get a beer when we leave Apple, the Apple store." And it goes, "Setting a reminder to get beer when you leave the Apple store." And that was when he was finally impressed.
Yes.
It was like, we walked away and he goes, "That's pretty cool." And I was like, I know, right? So.
The joys of life.
Yeah. So very I think that there's I don't think there are very many people who aren't impressed by it. Even people who would prefer it to be on an Android phone, I think they're impressed. But they'd want it on the Android phone. They just don't want it by Apple.
Right.
They want it, just not Apple.
Well, so what about who was it? The head of Android.
Oh yeah, this was great. So he's the head of the like you were saying, he's the head of the Google Android development.
Uh-huh.
Android chief says the phone should not be your assistant. And basically, what his argument was that a phone. This is Andy Rubin was saying that the phone should not. You should not talk to your phone. You should only talk through your phone to another person on the other side. And he said that that's not what people want. That's not what the phone should be. He was like, it was almost like he was trying to take a principled stand of like, this is like useless technology. And I don't believe your phone should be an assistant, was his quote. Communicating with somebody on the other, you know, or you should be communicating with somebody on the other side of the phone.
Here's what I think happened. I think it was his way. He didn't want to give Apple credit for doing something genuinely cool, and was a little jealous, and didn't know how to like not say, "Oh yeah, that's cool. We just don't have it." And so his way of doing it was to play it down. Of that's not what you want. And my only hope, and here's what I hope, because like Steve Jobs used to do that, right? You know, he'd be like, "People don't want tablets," or something like that.
Right. Like, the book is dead, yes. And comes out with the iBook store the next year.
Yeah, exactly. So my hope is that's what he's doing, where he's just like, "Oh, people don't want to talk to their phones." Where in the background, he's saying, "Guys, let's figure out how to get people to talk to their phones."
Yeah.
But let's do it in such a way where I can say, "You see, you're not talking at it, you're talking through it."
Right.
You know what I mean? Whatever. I can only hope that's what he's saying. I hope he's generally not that clueless, because Android is cool, and he clearly knows what he's doing.
And the goofy part about it is that like Google has been championing the voice recognition for 5 years.
They've been
the leaders in server side audio processing. I mean, on the Google homepage now, they've got an icon. You click it, and you can do voice Google searches, and it works fantastic. And you're sitting here going, "Really, really, Andy? This is so transparent. It's not even funny."
Yeah.
But I think it was just it's as big a compliment as you can get when your competitors try to act like what you just did does it's stupid.
Oh, it's dumb.
No, it's just dumb. It's dumb. You know, it's like when you insult the bully so well that all he can do is punch you because he doesn't have anything else in his belt anymore.
Right.
You beat him so bad, and you know, except Apple's bigger than Google, so they can't punch.
I firmly believe that maybe we can bet more beers that in less than a year, Google will have something. If not exactly the same, it'll work just as well. I have no doubt in my mind.
I guarantee
about that. All right, no bets.
I guarantee it. Yeah, I can't. Yeah, I think that's a dumb bet. but very, very exciting time because all of these things are starting to come to fruition.
Yeah, it's very cool. So we've got a total list of stories here. Do we want to keep going down, or do you got any last things you want to talk about with Apple potentially?
Happy birthday to the iPod!
Yay! 10 years old. Shed a tear. No wait, why am I tearing? No, okay. That's awesome. Sales are going down, but they're still awesome, and Apple makes a buttload of money off of them, right?
Right, basically, and just the idea that sometimes you got to trust Steve Jobs, trust Apple, and trust a product that doesn't seem like it's going to be that exciting, because it's not pervasive doesn't mean it's not exciting, which will bring me to another article later on.
Before you do that, I read a cool article called the. Freemium and the iPhone App Store, the in-app purchasing model really works. This was on, I don't even know if I can say this, SplatF, SPLATF.com.
Yeah.
I think it has to do with a control F, but I don't actually know. Anyways, this guy, they do studies, right? The question is, how do you make money on the App Store? Or at least, what's the best way to do it? You got all sorts of options, right? You can sell your app on the App Store. You can have ads on your app. You can have in-app purchases. You know, these are all kind of options. And what's cool is what this guy's is saying, and he's got some data on it. It's the The best evidence, he says, is that 14 of the top 25 highest grossing iPhone apps are totally free to download, and they generate revenue from in-app purchases. And so basically what he's saying is that, like, if you want to make money off of an iPhone app, or, you know, just an iOS app, I guess, he's saying what you do is you give it away for free, because that gives you the broad distribution. Because, I mean, I'll download stuff for free. You're like, what the heck? It's free. I don't care. But if you're going to charge me 99 cents, I'm going to add it to my wish list and wait for a gift card to come along.
You're a bit of a freak. I want to mention that.
All right, most people.
But I understand. I understand the principle you're going
for. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And so he says, but what that gets you is the wide distribution, and then you provide opportunities within the whatever it is to you know, for people to do in-app purchases. Like, if it's a game, yeah, you could play the game and you could spend all the time, you know, building up your treasure, or you can buy treasure and, you know, build what you want right away. I mean, that's exactly what Zynga does, and it works amazingly, especially if you look at their recent IPO. They're worth billions of dollars. You know, it's brilliant. And surprise, surprise, it works on the iPhone too.
Now, I have a question about that. Because I was under the impression that on the iPhone, you couldn't have in-app purchases if the app was free.
That was their policy when they first came out with it. But since then, they've gone back. He's actually got numbers here, so I'm not so much of a freak. But free apps are downloaded 5 to 10 more times than an app that costs money.
Well, the only reason I said that is because I think that you're absolutely correct. Free apps are way more downloaded. I don't think people are quite as reluctant to spend 99 cents as you. That's all I'm saying.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
I think people buy apps, and they buy a lot of them. But they are way more likely to get the free one. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You know what's kind of interesting? I don't like free apps.
Oh.
I'm sort of the opposite. I want a high quality paid app. I know. I don't want any ads. I don't want to have to make in app purchases in order to get all the content. I want to buy it once and just have it. Which is
That's
really weird. It's like I paid for the full version of both Angry Birds. I paid for the full version of Plants vs. Zombies. I actually those are some of the free versions of those games are, you know, the most downloaded games on the platform. But I was like, I don't want ads.
So now, another article that I've actually read about that, which I don't have this one queued up right now, just because I couldn't remember it if you asked me to. But they're saying if you're going to run ads, you know, they've done analyses on that as well. And I play a solitaire game which does exactly this. They say that do not insert an ad at like the bottom of a screen on what they're doing. You want to have an ad during some sort of transition. Like with Solitaire, whenever I start up a new game, I get to see an ad. And it brings up a new screen. So it is a full screen, or, you know, 3.5-inch screen ad. And then I literally have to tap on something that says skip. And then it goes on. And they were saying what's nice.
It's a bit like a commercial.
Yeah, exactly. But they were saying is that people, you know, so it keeps the whatever it is that they're actually doing, you know, nice and clean, and people are not as annoyed by it. Plus, you actually require some sort of interaction with them, so you can guarantee that they've at least seen it because they had to tap on it to at least close it.
Yeah, you'd rather them skip it than just let it play through without any tap, because that means that they're not paying attention.
Right, and so they're just like, you know, it's pretty cool because you can have a full screen ad of some sort, so it's a better ad, it's not in the way, and they're like, they've just shown that those tend to be more, you know, effective in terms of ads. But
that's the words with friends model as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they've just shown that those, so it's what it sounds like is like in-app purchases, if it makes sense for your app, is totally the way to go with that. And I think they were even saying, like, you can supplement it with ads, which I was like, I guess if it's free, I suppose. And then you could offer a 99-cent version that gets rid of that, you know, that commercial.
That's the one cool part about the free ad app is that, you know, a lot of people will download it and just stick with that.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of person where if I'm not sure about the game, you know, obviously Angry Birds and Plants vs. Zombies are pretty safe
right.
that it's going to be a good game. But But if I'm not sure about the game, I can download the free version, go, okay, I like this, I just hate the ads, and then I'll go back, and I've done this on more than one occasion, I'll go back and purchase the full game and delete the free version.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Have it.
But yeah, so that was just some cool research, you know, on the business math side of it that I found pretty interesting.
Right.
I don't have an iPad. I don't have an app in the works right now, so not a huge deal. But someday,
someday.
I'll put my hat in the ring, and it'll be glorious.
So that's I personally like the I am a fan of the purchasing experience.
Interesting. All right.
I think there's a real rebellion in gamers with downloadable content currently.
Huh.
You know, I should just be able to buy when I buy a game, it should come with the full game. I don't find that players mind the idea of, well, okay, this is a little bit difficult. Maybe I can just purchase my way up the ladder a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Or, you know, like he's like saying, like, buy some more gold so I can do this instead of having to wait three days. Yeah, that's
right.
Or the
Team Fortress 2 model of buying hats where, you know, they're these decorations. They don't affect your gameplay at all. And they're literally hats. they're ridiculous.
Pretty awesome.
But people love them. And they don't detest that because it doesn't affect gameplay.
Right.
It just affects appearance. And
That's
I think
fair.
Those are the real things, especially with in-game apps. You really have to focus on that sort of a thing as opposed to buying the gun that you need to beat the final boss. That's just messed up.
That is just mean.
But, you know. So, yeah. So I think that would be a really... You could title the game like, you're going to hate this game. And just make it that every boss you have to pay 99 cents to get the weapon you need.
That's awesome.
It'd be like Zelda, where you get to the chest, and the chest is locked unless you pay.
Oh, dude.
That would be so horrible.
That would be so mean. And it's just like, and then you just sit there, like, I'm sorry, you literally have to pay to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a toll bridge. It's not even a, there's still, it's not like you get to skip anything. It's just to go further forward, you have to pay. That would be awful. It would. Oh, man, people would hate that, but... That'd be really funny.
Yeah. Oh, man. That'd be sweet. So, actually, I forgot to open up this article. Let's see if it'll still open up. It's giving me a notice of redirect. So, Facebook, and hopefully this will redirect notice. Is sending me to that. Oh, yeah, I want to visit that page. Give it to me. I don't know what the big deal is. The name of the article is "Are Facebook ID Cards in the Future, or in Our Future?"
Yeah.
This was on TechCrunch by Alexia Tsotsis.
Sounds like a disease.
Tsotsis. Tsotsis. Whatever. Alexia.
Alexia. Nice to
meet you. Apparently, Facebook filed for a trademark on the usage of Facebook on business cards, and more curiously, non-magnetic encoded ID cards, and some other stuff. And so that would include stuff like QR codes or NFC/RFID uses.
So everything without a magnetic strip, essentially.
Well, it sounds like, yeah, correct, yeah. Yeah, much like something called presence cards. I don't know what that is.
I have no idea what that is.
I don't know either. But how do you spell it? Presence, Presence. Sounds like a company name. Tells you where you're at. But here's an interesting idea. What if, you know, Facebook's going in this direction, and they're clearly, I mean, mobile's huge with them, and that's the direction they're headed in. But what if you did have like a Facebook ID card, where that in some way replaces your driver's license for an ID card for certain things? Like, instead of having a company loyalty card, you swipe your Facebook card and you get Facebook credits or You know what I mean? And that's how they're able to track who you are, and then they can tap into all of Facebook's demographic data in addition to that. And Facebook's able to somehow feed into their rewards system, and you can tweet out, "Hey, I just bought dog food at Petco. Check that out." Or, you know what I mean?
Oh, jeez.
You know what I mean?
People would love that. Yeah. But, I mean, it, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they did something where it's like, you know, you've got your Safeway card and there's a discount that comes with Safeway, and if they did an extra 5%, you know, discount or something if you've got your Facebook card and as opposed to your Safeway card. And it just, because it would essentially give Safeway all the same information about who's eating what where, give them all that information, but it would also come with all the demographic information of Facebook, and it would allow them to advertise on Facebook through your, you know, your
yeah,
your
and they'd have like potentially like, you know, interest information, you know, so like, you know, like demographic, it's not necessarily, oh, he's a male born in on October 18th, it's you know, he is into soccer and technology and cookies, specifically Oreos. You should sell him more Oreo cookies. You know what I mean? I mean, you can, because I think I actually am a fan of Nabisco. They don't.
Your identity is going to be so easy to steal after this show, James.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't think about that. F U R L O. How do you spell the last name?
This is like one of those. This is my social security number.
Yeah. So our very first sponsor is going to be LifeLock.
Right.
Oh yes. So, anyways, but it was like, it's just a cool idea, you know, of like Facebook ID cards. I don't know. I think that could be. There's some potentially very interesting things, because I think that Facebook has very valuable data on us and who we are and what we like. And I think they've got the clout now where you can start whipping out these cards. I can imagine, like, you're going to a bar, maybe, or maybe, like, a movie.
Oh,
I don't know.
Man.
There's all sorts of stuff where you can start, you know, you swipe it and it does an auto status update, or it just starts to feed data. And, you know, this, and once these different data sources start converging, you know, it does a check-in for you. I think it starts to get, I don't know, I starts to get very, very, very powerful, very quick.
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
I think that's, yeah, that's well, and the other nice part about, like, a card like that is if you were to have a card like that, you know, especially if it were RFID enabled or whatever, you know, a lot of cell phones are coming out with RFID, and I'd be willing to bet that the iPhone 5, when it eventually...
Or NFC?
Gets announced.
Is that what you're...
Yeah, what did
RFID.
I say? RFID. NFC, yeah, near... you know... RFID is a form of NFC.
Oh, I didn't know that. Fair enough.
So you are more technically correct, I suppose. But yeah, so I think you know, if your iPhone or your Android phone already has Facebook on it, it's already linked to that information, and you can go in and get the Safeway discount by just running your phone past it, like, boom, you're good. And then it would only be people like me who are intelligent phone-less who would need one of these Facebook ID cards, and you know, I'm sort of a Luddite when it comes to this sort of things.
Well,
anyway,
and that would
so.
Be cool. I mean, I could even see a use for, like, okay, you're at a business meeting, and you know, so you go, oh, here's my card, tap, and they've got your information now on their phone. You know,
yeah.
You don't have to do the bump thing.
Yeah.
And you could see where it has like tailored recommendations, where you tap your card or something before you even start shopping, right? And which I never got that, like. How cool would it be if you walked into Safeway and at the beginning of the shopping trip, you swipe your card and then it prints out offers for you before you even get started?
Well,
why don't you do it at the end when you're like on your way out and you've already given up your money? I you know, maybe that's too much of a hassle. I don't know.
You know, but if there was enough of a financial incentive of you get even better deals, yeah, why wouldn't you? And it's not like you're going to swipe your card one way or another. You know, it would be kind of nice if it gave you like a half an hour window. Well, I don't know how you would do that. But, you know, if you could do it somewhere like you didn't necessarily. If there was a financial incentive to do it, I could see people coming in and doing that. You know, you just have to set up a little quick kiosk that would allow people to run their card and get their information, you know?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And I think that you could do that with, yeah. especially with smartphones and their geolocation stuff, walk into Safeway and your phone rings and goes, "Oh, hey, you're in Safeway. Want some deals?"
Huh. Now that would be you know, pretty darn awesome. But I also think like Safeway and you know, companies like that, they need to get better about like tracking. Like, for example, how often do you buy milk? And, you know, and they go, this person buys milk every 2 weeks, and it's the 2.5% or 2.5. Nice. It's the two. It's the special milk. It's 2%, and it's a gallon of 2% milk every 2 weeks is what this person buys.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Safeway needs to get better about the, either whether it's like push notifications or sending an email or just something where, you know, they can say, "Hey, you're getting low on milk," you know, without making it creepy, I guess. You know, you should check out Foster Farms instead of Safeway Select or, you know, whatever. Yeah. I mean, there's so many opportunities there where they've got such rich data sets and they're getting all these patterns. And if they can start mashing them up with like the interest graph and with Facebook and getting more, you know, insights like that, I think you can start doing some pretty cool things. Now, obviously, there's this, you know, there's this, what I want to call it, like this trade-off, right? I am, in order to get more personalized offerings and results and, you know, hopefully either save money or get something that I really want, I'm going to have to give up some privacy in order to make that happen, which I think is always going to be, you know, there's always going to be issues there, and then and there's going to be a fight, in which case you're like, don't sign up, it's okay. You know, that's fine. We can still make money, just the regular shopping. But yeah. I think that there's some, there are some tremendous opportunities out there with the data that they have to really get personalized, and it doesn't have to just be like Netflix giving you personalized movie recommendations. I think
But that's a great example of it, you know, of you know, a company doing that and it working well for them. You know?
Yeah, and they hit me up on the very first home screen right when I show up. Here's our top recommendations for you. They don't wait until after I've watched the movie to you know, to go, "Oh yeah, by the way, you might be interested in this." Like, great, I'm already in the middle of one. I don't know, it's an interesting model. I think that so I mean, clearly I blew this up much bigger than what the Facebook ID cards is, but I think there's a very interesting future out there for things like Facebook to help out the brick and mortar world to make better, more personalized offers. I think like it's not Friend Feed. It's what was their name? Foursquare, the check-in app on the iPhone, and I guess they're on Android too. I think they're trying to crack that nut. I'm like, how do we help people and how do we team up with them? And they've like teamed up with Groupon to try to make that work, which I think is pretty interesting. But anyways, I already talked way too much about that. I just think it's a very it's a very interesting place to go. We've got a ton of data being collected in the world, and I think in the next few years we're going to start watching them actually get used, and that's pretty exciting from a data scientist point of view.
Yeah, no, understandably, it'll be interesting to see the direction that we go with that, and to see how that develops, and yeah, because the, you know, it's and I was it was in the bookstore today, and I think it was something to the effect of it was what was it called? It was popular mechanics or popular science, one of those two.
It was popular.
Pop something. Yeah. They were talking about how data is the future, and the, whoever controls the data controls the industry. And you know, so that's that is the zeitgeist right now, that idea that you got to control the data. And if you've got data, you got power.
You got to use it, but something. That's the trick.
Yeah.
I think it's ridiculous that Fred Meyer has a rewards program, but you still get your discount if you don't even use your card. Like, why? What's my incentive for using the card? I do not understand that at all. I think they have totally missed out on a huge opportunity that Safeway was smart enough to, you know, say, hey, you know what? Let's give them the discount if they swipe the card. And it's like, so you're always going to do it. And I do not, Fred Meyer just, like, they just don't get it, which is.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. At Safeway, I swipe my card even if I, don't have something that I got that I know there's a discount for, because I'm like, but what if?
Yeah.
You know? And I just do it, so it's become a habit.
Oh, you're adding up gas points, no matter what. So why not? You know, they've.
Oh, exactly.
It's a good system.
That's right. I've got a 30-cent gas discount.
Whoa.
Waiting for me
you
tomorrow.
Are spending way too much money.
Blame mom and dad. Oh. We all use the same
safety. Oh, yeah, me
card.
Too. I'm in on that one. There's oh, really? I so, had the okay. pleasant surprise one time of filling up
don't,
gas.
Don't,
and
don't you dare take my gas,
all right.
dude.
So I got to wake up at 6 a.m. and go get some gas.
Oh, my gosh. Did I tell you about the time I had a 20-cent per gallon discount and dad got it on his motorcycle, his 2.5-gallon tank motorcycle?
Oh, man. Well, but I hear that it'll last like... Wouldn't it last like 24 hours or something? Or because
Well,
what we had happen once.
We didn't take advantage.
Yeah,
of it.
Well, we had it where we went to Safeway and I like I said I give same phone number. We're all on the same account, so we're totally messing up Safeway, right?
Yeah.
These person
we're all over the country.
These personalized things that work for that for us, but we showed up and we had a 10% gas discount once, and I was like, oh sweet, yeah, fill up please. And then I went the next day with my truck and I was like, fill up please. And yeah. And it, for both of,
got
for
the
both
discount
cars.
Again.
Yeah. So was, yeah. Cause he was something like, it was like a 24-hour window or maybe it's different Oregon rules. I don't know. You should, but yeah, 30 cents though. Dang. So here's what I would tell you to do. After you fill up, when are you planning on filling up? Here we go. We're just making plans for this right
tomorrow.
Over.
Tomorrow evening.
Evening?
Yeah.
Ah, man.
I know. Well, I got to take the bus in the morning, so all right. I won't have a chance to leave.
Well,
I know. I'm killing you.
Well, I'll tell you what. No matter.
But it's 24.
No matter
hours,
what,
so.
Send me a text, because I might try to take advantage of that. And I'll just do like the, give me $10, and then we'll see what he says. In which case, I'll switch it to because I got to do it myself. Or no, I have to tell them what
right.
to do. In which case, I'll right. say, like, fill her up, please. all right. Good
yeah.
to know.
All right.
Good
yeah,
to
definitely.
Know.
I'll send you a
and then,
text.
And then I'll let you know if
that
works or not.
Yeah, and then I'll text Dad.
yeah. That's but, funny, though. Motorcycle.
I know. 2.5 gallons. I was so angry. I just spent $100 to get that and took it from me and just snatched
That's
it.
Awesome. Oh, I love it. Oh, I love the games we play.
I know.
Oh, man.
My favorite part about it for... to you know, disadvantage for Safeway is that we use a phone number that nobody calls.
That's so
anymore.
True. Oh, it is.
All right. All
so
right, all
back right. to tech news. We got
right.
Oh.
So I just kind of wanted to give a shout
yeah,
out.
Go ahead, shout it out.
There's a service that you and I have been using for a few years, and they're starting to get more and more traction with Dropbox. Dropbox, turns out they got a 9-digit acquisition offer from Steve Jobs for Apple to buy them. Apple is excited about Dropbox.
It's a cool service.
Yeah, it's a great service, and we've been using it for a while. And it was $250 million, it looks like, was the offer. So that's a ton of money that this company is getting. And I just wanted to kind of, let people know and that this is a great service for file sharing. Really, really good, powerful technology. And I really don't feel bad giving them a little free advertising since it's a free service.
we use it with this podcast.
Right.
I mean, it's for me, I make sure to share it with people. So I've got let me see here real quick. How many gigs do I got? I got a 4.8. No, that's 8 gig. Oh, how do I do the math here? So I've used 4.8 gigabytes, but that's only 27.4%. So 4.8 divided by 0.274. Ah, that can't be right. I have 17 gigs available. Does that sound right?
That sounds successful. Well, I signed up under you. You've had a couple people sign up because they give you free space if other
yeah,
people.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think.
If you recommend
if
other people.
Mine's a quarter full, and I've used about 5. Oh, I guess that's about right, huh? Wow, I have a lot of gigs free. Well, I do stuff like whenever they have their scavenger hunts across the internet, I participate in those and I share them with people. So I've just been slowly collecting gigabytes as it's been going on. So I store all files that I am working on is in a Dropbox folder. I don't actually use my documents folder. And then and the only thing I don't store is like music and videos. But literally everything else is in my Dropbox folder.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it.
And it's cross-platform, Mac, PC, iPhone. Whatever, you know, which is iPhone, right? Android, if you have to. but yeah, it's a great service, and obviously a lot of people think that they're worth a ton of money. So it's exciting to see them going, and you know, and XKCD did a comic about you know how difficult it is to, you know, we've had the internet around for how long, and how difficult is it still to this day to share files from one computer to the next?
Oh, that's so true.
You know, and Dropbox is really starting to change that, make it more and more, make it easier and easier and more and more accessible. So I'm pretty excited to see the future for that company, and hope they keep doing their thing.
But. I agree. I hope that they keep going. So another one that I wanted to talk about was it's kind of related to HP and data, because I'm interested in what goes on there. For starters, on Tuesday, it came out that Oracle bought a data company called, I'm not 100% sure how to say it. It's either like Endica or Endesa. It's E-N-D-E-C-A. So it's E-N-D-E-C-A. So I think it's DECA, in terms of like 10. So Endeca. Basically, it's a company. They're located in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Oh my gosh! And this is our podcast. So
yeah,
come back next week.
It's a good thing we don't do this live.
The thing that's getting in here is that Oracle is getting into the big data space as well. I mean, or more importantly, like the unstructured data space, which is kind of like the new thing for data. So like we talked about with Safeway and such, in that example, that is what is called highly structured data, where all the data has a field for it, and it has a, you know, and they know what the field is, and so you can do things with it. But there's a ton of stuff out there that is just like unstructured. An example is like a Craigslist post, where it's just a text box and you write whatever you want. There is a ridiculous amount of data in that text box, in that ad for Craigslist, but it's highly unstructured.
Yeah.
You know, they don't always mention the price. They don't always add a picture. They don't always give a description and, like, in the description, the dimensions and whatever. That's not there. And so it's companies like Endeca and Autonomy, which HP recently bought for $10 billion.
Yeah,
which I think, does it say how much they paid? No, it doesn't. It's all about going after this unstructured data, because that's an interesting place where you can start to really help out companies who, you know, like Craigslist, who just, they have this and they're like, I don't know what to do with it and how to get insights out of it. It's interesting that, they're getting in and they're going to go head to head with HP on this, which I think points to the fact that HP, you know, bought Autonomy for what at the time seemed like a ridiculous amount of money, and I think most people would say it still is a ridiculous amount of money, but I think it's also starts to justify, well, no, this is a place to play in. And I think what's interesting too is, you know, HP's, or I should say Autonomy's VP of something important, was talking a little bit of smack, saying, you know, Endeca is a good company. They do well in this one particular field of unstructured data. Whereas Autonomy, I guess, is like it's more broad based. So this is something that I will be following because I'm genuinely interested in it for multiple reasons. But so just wanted to kind of give an update that Oracle is now ready to go head to head with HP in the big data space. So we're going to see some more Opera going on there.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what all happens in a couple years, for sure.
That's exciting. I hope to hear more about that because, you know, from my perspective of it, it's not necessarily something that I really have a lot of experience with and a lot of understanding, but I understand that, you know, the theme of today's show seems to be data and, you know, and companies who are using data and what they're doing with it. And obviously that's a future of technology. So I look forward to hearing more about these and this kind of developing field of computers and computing science, because it's pretty exciting, you know?
Yeah, it's very cool.
You know?
It's very cool.
Yeah, definitely. So
Motorola, huh?
Yeah, Motorola. Yeah, nice segue. So I was trying to come up with something clever. How can I kind of get us into this?
I couldn't take the silence. I'm sorry.
There was nothing there. I know. It's understandable. So Motorola announced a new suite of devices. And
seriously?
This week. Yeah. Yes, this new suite of devices around the Android platform. The big one was the Droid Razr. So Motorola Mobility has been kind of struggling to make money and make sales. So they've tried the Droid and a couple different platforms, and the Droids have gotten good mind share, but they don't get very good profit share. They don't get very good usage share. So they're going back into the drawers and they're undusting the Razr and they're throwing the Droid on it. So now it's this super thin touchscreen OLED thing, 4-inch. It's kind of a cool looking device, actually, all things considered. But you know, and it'll be interesting to see now that Google owns Motorola Mobility how that sort of helps them against the competition. But at the same time that they were announcing this kind of cool new phone that they got, their cutting edge technology, they also announced an iPod Nano clone.
Nice.
And I don't know if I've talked about it on the show, but I'm pretty excited. I am going to buy an iPod Nano sometime, probably before Christmas.
Before Christmas?
Before Christmas, because for Christmas, I'm going to ask for a number of different wristband attachments so that I can have different watches and have the iPod Nano be the watch.
Cool.
So I'm very excited about it. So Motorola announced it, so I was like, well, you know, I might as well check it out. It's a little bit bigger than the iPod Nano, a little bit thicker, a little bit bigger, and it's already kind of big for the watch space. That was my first turn-off. But this is the
thing. Look at that picture of it on that guy's wrist.
I know.
Wow,
it's
bigger than his wrist.
I guess. Yeah, it's gigantic. So the iPhone or the iPod Nano comes with an 8 gigabyte version and a 16 gigabyte version, just like the Motorola. But the 8 gigabyte version costs—they just announced a price reduction. It's $129 out the door, and the 16 gigabyte is $149.
Okay.
So between $100 and $150. The 8 gigabyte version for Motorola is $250.
Oh my gosh.
The 16 gigabyte is $300.
What?
It's unbelievable.
That's more expensive than as my phone.
Right? Yeah. You could buy two iPod Nanos for the cost of one Motorola Motorola.
Why
iPod
would you?
Nano.
I guess you would. The only possible reason you would buy one is if you hate Apple.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of, is that they sat there and went, there is a small enough of people that want it, but they don't want iTunes. They've already invested in the Android ecosystem, so they can just kind of, you know, and I don't think there is. I agree. I don't think there is. I think they're wrong. I think they're absolutely
what
wrong.
What are they?
It's ridiculous.
Wow. All right. Well, I guess if all you're going to do is dust off an old phone and put a new operating system on it, you got free time on your hands. Why not?
Exactly. Yeah, it's actually got some cool. It's actually got it's a little bit more advanced. It's got like a 600 megahertz processor. Oh wait, that's not a big deal because the iPod Nano just works. I don't need that. It's got
what features does it have that the Nano doesn't have that the Nano will have next year?
It's a GPS. It's GPS okay, enabled. That's cool. The big thing. So with the iPod Nano, if you want,
that means the battery life is half the battery life too, right? Am I interpreting that correctly?
Yes, correct. So I was gonna say, so with the iPod Nano, if you wanted to track your location, you need those special Nike shoes, and then you get the Nike shoes that connect with your iPod, and it's got the little clip that like snaps in there. It's kind of a cool little thing, but the iPod Nano is capable of doing that. It just can't do it on its own. Whereas this thing is a standalone, and that to me is what I perceive to be the real real cost. It's ridiculous, though. It was just like I saw it, and I just started laughing. I was like, "You got to no way. There's not. This is not twice as expensive as the market leader, and you guys are gonna try to okay." And the thing is that it doesn't bring anything. You know, it's like okay, sometimes a product comes on. You know, Apple, for example, releases a phone that's twice as expensive as the next expensive thing in 2007, and people mock them for people aren't going to buy this, but it was a completely new platform, and it brought something new and exciting to the market. Whereas with the iPod Nano clone, it is a clone.
Well, that's
it,
the worst part too. Is that's what it's going to be called? And I just.
I don't even know what the name is. That's the funny part, It's just,
Motorola.
I don't know. It's the Droid Spider, I guess, is what it's called.
Cool name, I guess.
No. Sorry. It's the Moto Active. MOTO, capital ACTV.
Yeah, isn't Moto, like MotoSense their operating system or something? Yeah. Ah, lame. Whatever.
I know.
That's not news.
Whatever. It's... No, not at all. That's lame. I just thought it was funny.
Let me drop some real news on you.
Okay, thank you.
Motorola.
I know.
So Microsoft decided to, I believe the term is, drop a little future on us, like a ton of bricks, is
nice.
What John Biggs says in his TechCrunch post about Microsoft's augmented reality 3D Holodeck. Did you get an opportunity to watch this video on it?
Oh, I actually had watched the video before you even pushed it. So I got to make this mention. If you have not seen this video, you need to get yourself together and watch.
So
this video
to our listeners. He quotes a writer who actually says, "I won't attempt to describe what it does in great detail, except to say that with Holodeck, you can manipulate 3D virtual images with your hands. While this is only a research project at this stage, and when you watch the video, you can tell that it is, I can envision future applications in areas such as board gaming, rapid prototype design, and perhaps even telepresence, aka like video conferencing, where users would share a single 3D scene viewed from different perspectives. I know it sounds very Star Trek, but this is not science fiction." And you just have to watch the video. It's a 4-minute and 15-second video where this guy, he's looking at a screen and is literally like picking up these virtual 3D balls and like puts in a piece of paper and like picks them up and rolls the balls around on the piece of paper, and they interact with it. I mean, granted, like I said, it's a research project, and so it's kind of clunky and slow, but you look at that and go, wow, you know what, 5-10 years from
there's
now,
there's potential
this
here.
This is going to look amazing. Kind of Minority Report-ish, but it's 3D.
Right. Well, you know what I thought was a better movie example is Iron Man. The first movie when he's actually designing the Iron Man suit. He's got that little area, and it's like he's got that thing where he puts his arm into it, and he's able to move his arm around and see how it would fit on his arm. And it's exactly that.
Looks,
and the only difference is there's like a glass shield that this image is projected off of in this case, but it's the exact same, principle.
Yeah.
It was really
that's
cool.
Exactly it. So and they're showing that in a very, very crude yet real form. And it's just I mean, it's very cool. Well, Microsoft has this habit of doing this kind of tech and getting it out there early and showing it to people. And so I think ultimately someone else will run with it and be successful with it. But but very cool nonetheless.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is really exciting about it is that you're actually seeing it is the culmination of a number of technologies that are already well established, like distance sensing with the Natal or the Kinect.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially that same platform, which is how they know where the hand is, and how they actually project it into 3D space is with the screen that they're using is actually it's essentially just a teleprompter, and but how they actually project it to your eyes is it's just using basic face tracking software that to do angular manipulation to give you the proper perspective, and so you know they've got all these little tricks that are have been out there for a few years now and are finally really they're putting all the pieces together into these really awesome examples that where you sit there and go there's definitely potential here for software to be developed. I would use that. I think a lot of people would use that. We got a game changer here, you know. And this is the same sort of exciting technology we've been talking about for a while, and it's cool to see people, computer scientists, taking time to develop these technologies and push them forward.
Yeah,
you know, in a real
it's
way.
Very cool. Yeah, this is it's the future or some version of it. It's going to be awesome.
Definitely.
So, any last comments with what's going on in your life? I think we're about ready to wrap it up here.
Yeah, if anybody knows of a great, what's it called, PLC programming in ladder logic,
tweet about that.
Book, that would be fantastic if you could hit me up.
I don't.
The basic conclusion that I've had is that I need to learn it if I ever want to have a career in that field, and there aren't any books on it, so... I don't know how anybody learns it.
Well, maybe there's an opportunity for you there.
I think there might be. So So that's kind of where I'm at right now, and with that. So if anybody knows anything, it'd be fantastic.
All right. Good PSA. So I'm.
Hey man, I got a megaphone. I got to use it.
I agree. So an app that I recently downloaded. Is you can hear it getting started. Is the Smool? Whoa, it must be loud. Is the Smool? Oh man, I'm gonna say it wrong now. It's not the Orkana. It's the Ocarina. Their app where you blow into it. I don't know if you'll be able to hear this. But I've been playing with that recently. Pretty fun little app. It's fun to goof around with and play with. I like it. All you hear in the podcast is
It came through pretty clear. It's kind of hard to see if it's anything more than a sound file unless you're actually watching like me.
No.
He does
it
have
is.
His iPhone out and he is playing.
Here, I can actually put it on touch mode, which means you just have to touch it to play it. And you could tell.
Awesome.
This is clearly not a sound file.
If it is, it makes me wonder who took the time to make it.
Yeah. I'm not saying. But it's a very cool app. There's another little promo. But I think that's it for us this week. It was a fun conversation about what's going on.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for joining us. I'm James Furlow, and this is my brother Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.
Thank you.